I'm Ben Solak, and I host the Ringer NFL Draft Show with Danny Kelly, Danny Heifetz, and Craig Horbeck. Join us twice a week as we talk everything NFL draft and break down all the players who will make your team better. Except the Rams, because they don't really have any picks. Check us out on the Ringer NFL Draft Show on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
On today's episode of One Shining Podcast, I am still hanging in there. I am doing my best. I appreciate everyone reaching out and checking on my health. I officially have strep throat, if you can't tell by my voice being a little bit off right now. But look, it's the Final Four. It's coming up this weekend, so we have no time for caution. We have to go ahead and make things happen. So that's what we're going to do today. This is a jam-packed Final Four preview, and we got a good one for you, folks. We got Coach Jim Larrañaga, who was going to a second Final Four as a head coach, obviously the Hurricanes head coach this year. He is a lot of people were calling him the grandpa of college basketball. I call him just a legend. You know what I mean? He is one of the best. So he came on and joined us and talked to me about the matchup with UConn and what he expects in Houston, playing in a dome, all those types of things. So that's going to be fun. And then, of course, we have Kyle Mann, who has been right by our side this entire ride, breaking down all the games. We're going to break down and preview what we expect to see in the Final Four. So really excited about that. One housekeeping note before we get into the show. I just wanted to say for people, due to my sickness, look, it's Wednesday. It's March 29th. We're getting close. The goal was to get to Houston. The goal was to be there myself, producer Kyle, boots on the ground, having a great time, going to the games, you know, all the Final Four festivities that you could imagine. But due to my health and due to the fact that I am far from 100%, I think we're going to pivot and lean into the idea of being LA guys. You know, is that right, Kyle? Is that what we're going to do? We're going to stay in LA and hope to God that I get healthy. Is that the plan?
All I want to say is this is not my fault, and don't listen to my uncle. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I did not get taken sick, but yeah, we are going to stay home and maybe we'll watch the title game from somewhere that we could tell you if Tate is allowed to be around people again.
Yeah, my goal is by Monday for the national championship game, I am not contagious and I can hang out and have fun. We some of my friends in Venice are trying to put together a little watch party for us, so we're working out the details right now, but I just wanted to flag that for the friends of the program. I do not plan to be in Houston anymore. It's just not going to work out. Unfortunately, the Spotify security guards have given me strep throat. It was not Kyle, despite what Bill has put out to the world. I do not blame you, Kyle. It's not your fault. I don't know who gave this to me, but they are my worst enemy. Once I figure out who it is, I have to treat them as a true foe of the program moving forward forever. That's just what it is. But appreciate all the patience of the friends of the program. I'm excited about this episode. I'm excited to talk about the Final Four. We're going to be doing a reaction show on Saturday after the games, myself and Kyle Mann, the same routine we've been doing throughout the tournament. So get excited for that. Anything else, Kyle, before we get into this? I'm excited to talk to Coach Larrañaga.
I got nothing. But first, Woody Durham.
He takes the timeout. Technical foul. Technical foul. Technical foul.
All right, now joining us on One Shining Podcast, one of the best coaches in the country who just catapulted the Miami Hurricanes to their first Final Four in program history, Coach Jim Larrañaga. Coach, thanks so much for joining the show.
My pleasure.
Well, first and foremost, congrats on making history at Miami. As I said, first Final Four in program history. I have to ask because, you know, this is a surreal thing. It happens in college sports. But what was the feeling like on Sunday? I mean, when it finally hit you that you were taking this group to the Final Four?
I was just so happy for my players because they have worked so hard for this. They started last summer. They bonded, great chemistry on the team, great relationships on and off the court. And they also had a goal. We took the team to the Elite Eight last year, and the returning players said, we got to go at least one step forward. But really, the goal is to be the team that cuts down the net and listens to One Shining Moment on Monday night.
I feel that, Coach, and you know, you can kind of tell with the camaraderie of these guys. I thought one of the moments that signified that was one time all four guys had their arms around each other like they were, you know, guys on a soccer field watching PKs, right? You know, you had all four guys doing that. So that said to me that there was a chemistry there. This is your second Final Four as a head coach, your fourth Final Four in total, obviously an assistant back with Coach Holland with the Virginia teams back in the day. Is there anything, you're the most experienced coach in the Final Four, is there anything that you kind of have in your back pocket that you know about the Final Four experience that you can lean on a little bit, or is it different every single time?
Well, it's obviously different because you're playing in a different stadium. But, you know, the one thing is I share with my players today, you got to get used to the dome. Because there's 8,000 people there. It almost appears like you're outdoors. And in order to shoot the ball well, you got to be comfortable and confident. So we're going to get we're going to leave tomorrow, get to Houston on Wednesday, practice Thursday and Friday, and be ready to go on Saturday.
And you mentioned the dome. One of the things that I have noticed, you know, from going to the Final Fours over the past few years that's interesting about a dome is communication, right? Especially for like assistant coaches and, you know, switches and things like that. It's really hard for players to hear in those 80,000 seat domes. Is that something that you're kind of keeping an eye on and trying to figure out too as you get ready for that environment?
Well, you're exactly right, because in 06, the players couldn't even hear my whistle.
And that right.
was first. So I told my coaches that. I told the players that today. And, you know, we have to make some adjustments. But what's great about our team, we have such great leadership. When we call a timeout, I meet with my coaches first. And then I sit in a stool with my five players who are in the game right in front of me. And against Texas and several times during the season, I'd turn around after meeting with my assistants, turn around, there'd be Norshad Omir talking to the five guys that are in the game. So our communication within our players is very good, and it's going to need to be at its best on Saturday night.
Absolutely. And speaking of that 06 run, ironically enough, you know, your team played the tournament favorites in the Elite Eight, right? A lot of people thought that the UConn Huskies, coached by Jim Calhoun that year, they were the team of destiny, so to speak. They were on their way to a national championship. I think they were the number one overall seed. Everyone talked about the size of UConn, right? You guys had a team of, you know, 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", guys that were playing in the front court. And, you know, there is some symmetry there, you know, talking about UConn going into this weekend. Is there anything that you can lean on from that experience? And do you see the connective tissue between 06 with that Elite Eight team playing UConn? You guys won in overtime. One of the best games in March Madness history for people that haven't gone back and checked that out. But do you see the symmetry between, you know, your team this year and what you faced back in 06?
Well, certainly there's a lot of similarities. You know, our size at George Mason was, our tallest starter was 6'7".
Right.
Whereas UConn was 6'9", 6'10", 6'11". Yet the game is not necessarily about height. It's really about skill. And that George Mason team had a ton of skill, and so does my Miami team this year. Now, Danny Hurley and his staff have done a great job of preparing his players. They're winning not only by double figures, but they've basically been dominating their opponent throughout the tournament. So my staff and I are trying to prepare our players for what we have to do against them to give ourselves the best chance possible. I tell the players all the time, it's not about who we play or where we play. It's about how we play. If we can execute our game plan better than the opponent, that's what will work.
Yeah, there's obviously the similarities, but, you know, the team in 06, right? I mean, George Mason, an 11 seed, kind of viewed as a Cinderella and underdog. I don't think that this Miami team and this group, like you said, they had an expectation to make the Final Four and do something bigger than they did even last year, making the Elite Eight. So what is the mentality of this group? If it's not the underdogs, what do you guys kind of view yourself as, and what does that confidence come from?
Well, the underdog term, I think, you know, might be applied to a George Mason. But quite frankly, we were a really good team and had a great regular season.
I trust me, Coach, I remember as a Carolina fan, you guys roughed us up in the second round.
But this team, we're co-champions of the ACC with Virginia. We've had a great year. People follow the ACC, know how good we are. It's really a matter of 68 teams make the dance. And we can see by who's made the Final Four, all four of us are really good. The matchups, it's not the conventional Final Four with all the blue bloods, but it'll be a very entertaining Final Four because of style of play.
Absolutely. And one guy I wanted to bring up because of his style of play and his versatility, really, is Jordan Miller. Jordan Miller against Texas plays a literal perfect game. I saw Christian Laettner was tweeting at him, congratulating him on going perfect from the field, perfect from the free throw line. One of the few guys that has ever done that in NCAA tournament history. Can you just speak to Jordan Miller's just growth as a player and how much you can lean on him as someone that can be so versatile, especially defensively, and what he's been able to bring to this team this year?
Yeah, Jordan Miller is a great college player, and he's going to play as a professional for a long time. He does everything well. He's had to guard guards who are, you know, 6'2". He's had to guard big guys that are 7 foot. At the offensive end, he does everything. He can shoot the three. He's a great free throw shooter. He's great at driving to the basket. He's a terrific rebounder at both ends of the court. And most importantly, he's a great teammate. Mm. He's got a lot of leadership skills. He's very articulate. And his teammates love him. And the coaches love him. So, you know, he's a very confident young man. And I'm sure he's excited and looking forward to Saturday.
Yeah, I appreciated him in the Texas game. There were a couple times in the first half where he kind of got everyone together in the huddle and he was doing the calm down, right? He was like, guys, let's take a beat here. Let's take a breath. We're going to be okay. This game's not over. And obviously, as we all saw, it was far, far from over. I did want to ask you about Isaiah Wong had a quote this week where I thought was pretty interesting. He said that he appreciated the ACC for getting this team battle tested. Can you expand on that mentality? And, you know, what were some of those moments this year in the conference that, you know, kind of got this team prepared for this run in March?
Well, quite simply, there are a lot of great coaches in the ACC and a lot of great players. And we play against all different kinds of styles. Like you go to Syracuse, you got to face the 2-3 zone. You play Virginia, you got to face the pack line defense. You play at NC State, you're talking about pressure. You go to play against North Carolina, you're talking about the incredible talent that they have. So I think what Isaiah was referring to is every night in the ACC, it's a dogfight.
Mm-hmm.
The ACC, to me, is the best basketball league in the country. And we're playing against our ACC opponents, we know we have to be at our best if we hope to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a fellow ACC guy, I could not agree more. And, you know, I appreciate Miami going and represent the conference at the highest level and making a Final Four and, you know, getting everything done for us. One thing I wanted to ask you about, which I think is kind of your signature trait, in my opinion, just from a distance, and every coach has their signature trait, but one of yours is the ability to take timely timeouts, right? When a team is making a run, you know, when your team needs to kind of get galvanized and get together, you know, is that a skill? Is that a feeling? You know, what is that to be able to kind of get a game kind of back in control, back, get the reins back, right, with a timeout?
Yeah, I've told my players and the coaches the most difficult job I think a head coach has is figuring out when to utilize your timeouts and when to substitute and who should substitute. You know, it's just really challenging. You know, the other day against Texas, we played a lineup that never even practiced one possession together. Bensley Joseph, Nigel Pack, Isaiah Wong, Wuga Poplar, and Jordan Miller at the five. No, we never practiced that way, but we wanted to start switching ball screens, and Norshad Omir was in a little bit of foul trouble. So we just decided we'll go small and try to match up with them so they don't end up getting all these threes. And it worked. You know, the guys did a great job on the court.
Yeah, and Jordan Miller speaks to his versatility, right? To be able to step down, slide down to the five, switch on the guards, and it was an incredible act on his behalf. And, you know, there's been some moments in the tournament where you've made specifically some great coaching decisions, whether it be pressing, right, you know, against Drake with about 3 minutes to go in that game. How much of that stuff do you practice situationally to get prepared for a tournament, or does it all kind of just come together, you know, after like a culmination of all the things that you've worked on throughout the season?
Well, the answer to that is simply, you know, when we start practicing, we try to implement a style of play that will work against everybody. Mm. You know, we play predominantly man-to-man defense, but there's also some nuances within the man-to-man. We also practice trapping at the half court level and at the full court level. So we can implement any of those ideas either in practice or in a game, you know, just by signaling it. And our players have been very good. They're very smart basketball players. They can adapt to every situation.
Yeah, I appreciated Kansas State coach Jerome Tang. He was talking about his team, and he said, you got to have dudes, right? He was like, that's what it comes down to. And when I look at this Miami group, you know, even like Poplar, I mean, there's a lot of guys where you're like, that guy just, he knows how to play the game the right way. But one of those players that signifies and is sort of the face of this team, in my opinion, is Norchad Omier. Can you just speak to the ability for him? First off, you know, had the ankle injury coming in the tournament. There was some uncertainty. He worked his way back to be able to play. The last game against Texas has foul trouble, but then comes back late in the game, draws a big foul late, gets a big steal late. How much is he the heart of this group?
Yeah, Norchad Omier is amazing, and it starts with his personality. He has more energy than most five people. He just bubbles with energy. And because of that, his smile, his energy, and his relationship with his teammates, they all love him. They all play with him. The only problem is they rely on him so much for rebounding that they don't rebound as well as they should. But Norchad has a lot of leadership skills in him. He's just a tremendous young man. He loves to rebound. He's terrific at guarding much bigger guys. He's only 6'7", but he's guarded guys that are 7 feet, 7'1". And I guess this weekend, guy like Klingon, he's 7'2". Mm. So we got our hands full, but I know Norshad's up for the challenge.
Yeah, his energy is very infectious. Like, even if you just watch him on TV, I mean, I watched him all throughout the year in the ACC. I mean, he just seems like a very lovable, likable guy. All right, Coach, last question, and I'll let you get out of here because I know you got to get prepped. You got to get ready for the travel to Houston. This is not about the Final Four. It's just a fun story that I saw that was getting put out there. I saw Fran Fraschilla put this story out, but the story was that Bob Cousy, back in the day when he was the head coach of Boston College, he did not recruit you, and you responded. You went to Providence, of course, and you responded playing against Boston College, had 36 points against him. You've had an amazing basketball run, you know, played at the same high school, obviously Archbishop Molloy. How much of that era of you as a player helped build the competitive spirit that you have today as a coach, and that story in general with you and Bob Cousy? I thought that was fascinating.
Well, first of all, I went to Archbishop Molloy. My mind is the best high school basketball in New York City, especially at that time. A lot of competition, but Molloy was the best. And the reason is the coach. Jack Curran was the basketball coach there for over 50 years, winningest coach in the state of New York's history, also a great baseball coach. And he basically prepared you for playing in college. And when I was a senior, he knew I wanted to go to Boston College, so he called Bob Cousy to come down and evaluate me. And Cousy came to the game. I had a very subpar game. I only was not in double figures one time, and it was that night. Not because of Cousy, but because of the opponent. And afterwards, I met with Coach Cousy, and he said to me, "Hey, I don't, you know, we're not going to recruit you for Boston College. I think you're a Division II player."
Wow.
Well, of course, any competitor would take offense to that. And Coach Cousy's had a guy in mind that he was, you know, recruiting hard and gonna sign. So when I signed with Providence, I always earmarked the Boston College game. In my freshman year, I actually had 39. In my sophomore year, I had 28.
Oh, man.
So my college career, I enjoyed it very much at Providence. I got drafted by the Detroit Pistons. But the thing I enjoy the most is coaching. I always wanted to do what my high school coach, Jack Curran, did. And I've been able to do that. And he inspired me. And I appreciate everything he did for me.
Mm. Well, there you have it. He's Coach Jim Larrañaga, a surefire Hall of Famer in my book. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Coach. And good luck in Houston.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, and now joining us, he is the man who has continued to drive this show while I have struggled with my health over the past week. And, you know, it's been great conversations. I don't even remember what I've been talking about, but I know he's excited because all the Kentucky guys showed out at the McDonald's All-American game last night. So we'll get into that maybe at the end of this. But first and foremost, we're going to do a Final Four preview with our guy, Kyle Mann. Kyle Mann, how fired up are you about everything that's going to happen this weekend? Or are you buying and drinking the Kool-Aid that this is a lame Final Four, nobody's going to watch, da-da-da-da? Are you buying that right now?
Well, I can't control whether or not people watch. I can sort of try to take the temperature of the interest level. I mean, I've kind of been thinking about, if I were, you know, San Diego State, Florida Atlantic, I would just kind of be like, I'm sure they have some kind of a chippy attitude about this. I'm sure because people are like, well, there's definitely, you know, there's fewer big names in the Final Four. Kevin and I were talking about on the Ringer NBA draft show that, you know, there aren't any projected lottery picks in this group. But these are matchups that could be pretty fun. One of which is kind of like a clash of styles. And then the more high major matchup between UConn and Miami, I think is interesting for different reasons. But I actually feel like, you know, it may not go down on paper as like the biggest primetime event, but I do think that both of these games could end up being pretty entertaining at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are jumping the gun. They are upset that the Blue Bloods aren't here. But look, we're two guys that are Blue Blood guys, and we watched a full Blue Blood Final Four last year. So if anything, it's fine to give the stage to somebody else. And, you know, look, this is my favorite stat so far. For the first time since 1970, the Final Four will have three first-time participants. And then, of course, the fourth is UConn, who is looking for their, I mean, I can't even believe this, their fifth championship since 1999. And, you know, if they do that, if UConn was to go on and win their fifth championship, and then, you know, if you look at all the little, you know, you read the tea leaves, right, all the connective tissue between this tournament, it seems like everything points to UConn winning this tournament. If they do that, we're talking about UConn being in Indiana territory, maybe in Blue Blood territory. And we can get into all like the bigger picture narrative stuff with that. But I wanted to ask you, is this UConn's tournament to lose? Because I've seen a lot of people saying, because this tournament has been so crazy, right, that you can talk yourself into anybody could win it. But I think if you really strip it down, you know, you go bare bones, they've won every game by an average of 22.5 points right now. They've dominated so far, and all the stars are aligned for UConn to win the national championship. Am I crazy to say that? I think they're the undisputed favorite right now.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, I have been kind of wobbling back and forth about this, Tate, to be honest with you, because last night we made our predictions. I hadn't really thought about it other than in the moment, like what my prediction was going to be. Which, you know, maybe poor prep on my part, but the more I've thought about it and the more I've kind of dug in and looked at this matchup, I'm not so sure that, you know, I was for sure, like I picked UConn and then I was like, they'll just run, you know, they'll run it out. They'll blow out whoever they play in the championship game. This Miami matchup, man, I'm not so sure that like, they're going to just bowl them over, because Miami does some things well that UConn is vulnerable to. I think some of the matchups could be interesting on an individual basis. And we've seen Miami play against some of these teams that defend really well and impose their will on the glass. We've seen their team speed kind of like daunt people. But you're right. I mean, UConn's been like basically like secretariat in the race to 69 to steal one from you. And it's like they haven't yet to give up more than 65 points in a single game during this tournament. I think you can get overwhelmed by how well they've played together. You know, Gonzaga hasn't really played great defense all season. UConn obviously just kind of took them to town. And then once Timmy was vulnerable and once Timmy picked up that foul, dumb like discard foul. Yeah, I mean, that was game. And yeah, I mean, I'm kind of talking myself into Miami. I don't know. So you feel like you're pretty firm on UConn. I wouldn't be surprised if Miami does this, man, because they keep getting in these situations where it's like, well, I don't know. And then they keep doing it. There's kind of a, you know, we talk about the magic of UConn. It feels like there's something magic going on with Miami, too, man.
Yeah, I'm on antibiotics right now, so I'm a little bit loopy. So I'm sitting around the house. I'm watching SportsCenter. I'm arguing with myself in my own head. And, you know, I'm doing the Lee Corso not so fast. And the reason why I do it not so fast on my own thought about UConn being the prohibitive favorite is because UConn, when they play close games, Kyle, man, they don't fare well. And they seem to get really tight when they get in close games. And right now, they have been dominating the tournament, as I said. And I am worried that if they get into a tight game with Miami, then Miami has all the experience. They're battle tested. They like playing in close games. They've been down by, as we saw against Texas, 13 points in the second half. As we saw against Drake, they were down by 4 points with 3 minutes to play, right? And then they go on a 10-0 run and win the game. So Miami has been there. They've been in situations where, you know, things haven't gone their way and they fight out of the hole and they climb out and, you know, it's, you know, they rise to the occasion. I am very worried that if UConn gets in a tight game, that they get tight. And then we all are saying, oh my God, how do we not see this? How do we not see this coming? Because that is the one Achilles heel of this UConn group is that they haven't been pressed so far in the tournament, and maybe they just keep dominating, right? They're 6-0 in Texas, you know, all time in the tournament. So they like playing in Texas. Obviously the tournament is going to be in Houston, Texas. So that bears well for UConn, you know, but they only have one tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah, historically. And you know, but as a group, as this group, I wonder if they get a little tight, if they falter a little bit, if they get in a close game. That is my only concern when it comes to UConn, that if Miami pushes them to the brink, gets them thinking about it a little bit, that they maybe, and maybe their coach too, right? I talked about Dan Hurley. He's my biggest concern when it comes to UConn. But if they get in a close game.
You really think he stinks as a coach, Tate? I feel like you haven't been taken to task about that enough. Have the UConn community come at you at all? You've just blatantly said it a few times, I feel like.
It's not about Dan Hurley, the coach, really. It's more as Dan Hurley's like reactions on the sideline and the fact that he can flip a game. You know what I mean? I mean, I've seen this guy call 15 officials a clown, you know, and I've seen those officials then take it out on him because of that, and rightfully so, right? And he said he took the clown line out of his vocabulary. But at the end of the day, I feel like if things get tense and tight, maybe he breaks a little bit too. And shout out to our guys at CBB Analytics, because they did, you know, out of all the four-man lineup combos, UConn and Miami take the top six spots in plus minus, right? So I thought this was pretty fascinating, and it shows how good of a game this could be. And I think this is going to be one of those games where it's coaching, right? It's trying to find mismatches. It's trying to find matchups. And you know, Coach Larrañaga, who you just heard, was talking about how Jordan Miller had to play at the five. And he put a five-man group out there against Texas that had never played a minute together all season long, right? And they thrived. So Miami and UConn, I think this is going to be a chess match, to say the least.
Yeah, they just have a lot of players with, like, high basketball IQ. Not that UConn doesn't. They do, too. They have plenty of those guys. But they, you know, putting Miller at the five, I think, was an interesting experiment that obviously worked well for them, but they do it in different ways. I've kind of talked a lot about how UConn uses their off-screen execution to sort of like distract and open up some of the other things that they do well. You have to really, really stay attached to Jordan Hawkins no matter where he is, whether he's shooting the ball or not, and that spreads the floor. I just kind of wonder, though, I don't think that they have faced physical on-ball creators quite like Miami in this tournament. You know, Arkansas has some perimeter talent on ball, but, you know, Anthony Black, not necessarily a shooter, so he's not stretching you uphill. Nick Smith was really inconsistent. We've seen Ricky Council and Devo Davis. They were really up and down. This is a different animal. Nigel Pack is like an excellent pull-up three-point shooter in the pick and roll. He will burn you. He can hit threes. Doesn't care where he is. We've seen him. He does not give a shit if he catches it from 28 feet, he'll pull. But I think the team speed from 1 to 5, I think, is going to be the interesting thing for me, because Miami doesn't have a player over 6'9 in their rotation, but they just destroy people with speed. You know, we saw them go up against Texas. They did the same kind of thing. They just wear you down, wear you down. They're fearless. And another thing that's really interesting to me is that, you know, they really pummel people. When their speed to the glass, I think, is going to be the interesting dynamic to watch between them and UConn. UConn obviously has some size, but their speed to the glass is going to be important because they are very efficient when they follow up their misses. I think they're the most efficient team remaining in the tournament, and UConn is vulnerable to that. So I think that's going to be a key thing to watch.
Yeah, and I like the four horsemen is what I'm calling them for Miami. Nigel Pack, Isaiah Wong, Jordan Miller, Norchad Omier. I think those four guys might be the best four in the country. And I love when you look at those four and then you look at their matchups, right? Nigel Pack, Tristan Newton, that's going to be a fun matchup. Jordan Hawkins, Isaiah Wong, that's going to be a fun matchup, right? And then this is the one that you and I were texting about this. Andre Jackson versus Jordan Miller. And then obviously we got Sanogo and Omier, and Omier is 6'7", Sanogo's, you know, 6'9", 6'10". So the size there will be a conversation point. But Jordan Miller and Andre Jackson, I think that might be the matchup to watch in this game, especially if you're an NBA fan. But if you're just a fan of basketball in general, those two guys, I think, could be the difference in this game.
Yeah, I've almost thought about it to the point where I'm like, I feel like Wong's going to be a tough cover for Hawkins, to the point where I was like, I wonder if they try Jackson on Wong a little bit to put a little athleticism and length and speed on him. That could be interesting, but you really nailed it with the lineup thing. I feel like it's easy to get distracted by the runs that UConn goes on, and it doesn't mean that they're insignificant or they don't mean anything, but they really pile up these runs. You know, you talked about offensive rating. The Newton, Hawkins, Jackson, Caravan, Sanogo lineup has an offensive rating of 134, which is astronomical. But there are times when the most like incredible, like daunting thing that they've been thrown out there that demoralizes teams is they'll slide in Aline there. They'll slide him into that spot and bring Caravan out and throw a three guard look where they'll be like Aline, Newton, Hawkins. That'll be an interesting matchup for them. I don't know, like defensively, if they're forced to do that against Miami more. It'll be interesting to see if Caravan can stay on the floor in that look. But UConn's bigs also run. That's the counter. Like their bigs do run pretty well. So I don't know. I wouldn't put it past Sanogo to that. That's the thing I'm probably most interested to watch. I'm most interested to watch Omier and Sanogo, their speed and activity on the glass. I think it's going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, and I was asking Coach Larrañaga about this because it kind of reminds me of George Mason. You know, obviously Larrañaga is the only coach that has Final Four experience as a head coach in the Final Four this year. But fascinating enough, I mean, in 06, they play UConn, who was the prohibitive favorite. Everyone thought that UConn was going to go win the national championship in 2006. They were number one team in the country for the majority of the season. They get to the Elite Eight. They're playing an 11 seed in George Mason. It was a foregone conclusion they were going to win this game. They had size. They had been dominating everyone on their path so far. And then all of a sudden, they played George Mason, a very scrappy group. And this team just pushed them to the brink. And even though they didn't have the size, it was an electric game. Ends up going to overtime. George Mason wins in overtime. You know, we know the rest. George Mason goes to the Final Four, da-da-da-da. But I think that this game might have the same sort of complex where the size of UConn obviously will stand out with Klingon and Sanogo, but I think that Miami's, you know, they're going to get to loose balls. Their quickness might be the difference. And if we get to a situation where, like I said, it's a tight game, Miami is the team that is more prepared for that kind of moment, in my opinion, than UConn. The biggest adversity that UConn has faced in the tournament is that they got kicked out of the Luxor Hotel in Las Vegas because it was dirty. And apparently Donovan Klingon's laptop got stolen while they were like going through practices. So those are the two, you know, adverse situations that they've had to deal with. Wait. And they have. Yeah. Wait,
they got kicked out. Wait, they got kicked out because it was dirty, or they were dirty? What do you mean? I mean, and also, have you seen the Luxor Hotel? Are you surprised by that? Why would you choose to stay there?
Why would the NCAA put them in the Luxor? It makes no sense. I think they ended up going to Resort World. So shout out to them for the upgrade. But apparently while they were practicing, they got robbed. And Klingon's laptop and iPad got stolen. So like I was saying, the only adversity that UConn has faced so far in this tournament has been off the court, right? So like that is what is concerning about this group. Everything has been kind of a straight line, beeline path. And, you know, they hadn't won a tournament game, or they had won one tournament game since 2014. So this is a UConn group that is, even though it's UConn and we all know UConn and they're going for their fifth title since 1999, like I said, this is unfamiliar territory a little bit, and what happens when adversity hits on the court. And I think Jim Larrañaga is the perfect coach to handle this type of situation, which is another question and another conversation point I wanted to get with you, which is talking and ranking these coaches in the Final Four. Because I think, you know, a lot of times we go into the Final Four, like last year, you look at the coaches, you got Jay Wright, Bill Self, you got Hubert Davis, and you got, of course, Mr. K. And those four coaches going into it, right? You could argue who was the best coach. I think Bill Self showed himself as the best coach in that situation. Obviously, Jay Wright was dealing with an injury. Hubert Davis's first year on the job. Mr. K is basically already in AARP mode at that point. He's not really coaching. John Shire is. So I wanted to see what you think. Like, what is your ranking of these coaches in the Final Four? And then we'll go back and forth and see where we end up.
Well, I think I know who you're going to have fourth based on the things that you said, your track record. I mean, I'm going to go with Larrañaga first just because of his experience. But I do think it's important to note that Dutcher has experience as an assistant. You may have said that. I was looking at something. But that's important to note. I mean, Dutcher has a ton of experience, and he's been in the tournament when he was coaching with Steve Fisher. But I mean, you know, being the main dude is a different thing. I'm going to put Larrañaga first because I think he's proven, you know, in different scenarios, he's shown how versatile he can be. But and then I'm going to have Dutcher second. And then I'm going to actually have Hurley third. Yeah. And then Dusty May, I think actually if we came back like 10 years from now, I feel like he could be as high as two on this. I mean, he seems like a guy. Florida Atlantic, we'll talk about him here in a minute, but that I like his confidence. I like his, like, I feel like he has a really promising future as a coach. But right now, I think the pedigree, I would have to have him last in this group of four, which I don't think is that big of an insult.
Yeah, I think I'm going to blow people's minds when I rank my coaches right here. And these are my, I think Larrañaga's number one. You and I can agree on that. I think number two is Dusty May. I think Dusty May is the second best coach in the Final Four. I love what he's done so far in this tournament. I think that he has a great way about carrying himself on the sideline. I think that he does a good job with his group of never letting them believe that it's over with. You know what I mean? They've had even the Memphis game, right? You know, we had a jump ball that wasn't a jump ball. They're trying to call a timeout. They've had so many little moments and comebacks throughout the way. Tennessee, if you were watching the first half, you were like, this is a foregone conclusion. Tennessee's going to win this game. Not so fast. Kansas State, they became the darlings of the tournament. We're all talking about Marquise Noel and Keontae Johnson. They basically take Keontae Johnson out of the game, and they make Noel beat them as a scorer. I mean, I think he's done a great job as a coach. So I have Dusty May at number two. I have Dan Hurley at number three. So maybe that's a little bit of a shock. Didn't have him in last. I think Dan Hurley is number three. I think he's done a good job with this group. I think he's maximized this group. So I give him his credit. He's done a good job with this team. And then number four, I have Dutcher, and there's no disrespect to Dutcher. It's just that I worry a little bit where there's a sense of happy to be here, right? When Brian Dutcher did the trust fall, and the crowd was chanting, "We believe that we will win," you know, and that whole moment in time, I just felt like that was a very happy to be here kind of. And if you know Coach Dutcher,
Feels like a vibes driven ranking. I don't know. Feels like a. I'm just sensing a lot of like vibe kind of criteria in your thought process. You don't value the defensive philosophy of Brian Dutcher. You don't think that that's. You seems like you're kind of getting enamored by the oohs and the ahs of the offense, Tate. You got to guard the ball, man, on the other side.
I am. I'm defense first. In fact, if you don't get a defensive stance, I have no respect for you, which is why me and James Harden had such a tough relationship for a lot of his time in Houston. You know what I mean? And when James Harden got traded from Brooklyn, that was the first thing I looked for as far as a telltale sign. If James Harden is actually going to play, will he get in a defensive stance? And then the first Philly game I watched, he actually sat in a defensive stance. And I said, yes, this is great. I love defense. I like San Diego State's defense. I just worry that with all the conversation, I saw Jay Billis, you know, the voice of college basketball, talking about freedom of movement and how we need to, you know, limit some of the physicality in the game. And it's mucking the game up too much. It's making it ugly. I worry if some of those, you know, talking points kind of filter down into the game and there's some backlash that comes to San Diego State a little bit where they maybe get into some foul trouble. But as we know with San Diego State, they have a nine-man rotation. They love doing the hockey subs. They have the depth to kind of deal and weather the storm of foul trouble. But that's my only thing. I worry a little bit about Dutcher being happy to be here. But that's it. I think that's fair rankings. And I like that we have different rankings. You know, I think it would be unfair if we put out our coaching rankings and they're the exact same and we both had Dan Hurley last. So congratulations, Dan Hurley. You're not last. You get the bronze medal. For the third best coach in the Final Four.
Yeah, with coaches, I'm always just it's so hard to know what goes on behind the scenes with coaches. A lot of times people will criticize coaches and they like don't know what they're talking about. Like, and I always try to like, and I'm not saying I know. You know, I think mm-hmm. you can kind of just look at results and you can look at the way they play. But some people, one of the laziest ones you'll hear is they'll be like, "Well, I just don't understand the rotations." That's code for. I don't like what he's doing, but I don't know what I'm talking about from people. Like you'll hear that from people who are criticizing coaches. So I just always try to take people to task. I'm not saying I know the answers to the test, but if people say that, I'm like, what is it that you don't like? Why don't you like? Just ask them a couple questions and it usually falls apart. But I just feel like with these coaches, I'm like, yeah, it's a tough thing to do. It's subjective. I mean, I definitely could see. Like we agree though that Dusty May, we both have a lot of confidence in him, I think.
And I think at this point, I mean, all four coaches have had an amazing year. And I wanted to point this out because again, it goes back to a lot of conversation just because of the seeding, I think too. And the unfamiliarity, right? These are names and faces and places that we haven't really talked about a lot in college basketball, but all four of these teams finished the regular season ranked inside the top 25 in the AP poll. All four currently ranked top 25 in KenPom. Which we can talk about that. That's his whole other, you know, separate thing. But and then all three outside of UConn won their conference championships. And then FAU and SDSU won their conference tournaments as well. So this isn't shocking, right? It isn't shocking that these teams are here. FAU is one of the four teams in the country to win 30 plus games. So it shouldn't be so surprising. I know that they're all new and they're unfamiliar. But it shouldn't be something where we're like, oh, these guys don't deserve to be here. They got lucky, whatever the case may be. And somehow I feel like that has become a bit of the conversation. And I don't really enjoy that. I don't like that. I'm not a fan of that. So I just wanted to point that out.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world. They just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
All right. So we talked about UConn. We talked about Miami. I think that's probably going to be the high profile game, right, on Saturday. But the other game that we got to talk about, obviously, is SDSU taking on FAU, the Owls of FAU. And they're riding an 11 game winning streak. They also play a 9-man rotation. So I think this is going to be a fascinating game, Kyle, man, because both these teams are going to have hockey subs. Both these teams are going to be trying to find mismatches. Both these teams are going to be rotating guys in and out of this game. And, you know, the defense of San Diego State is going to stand out, as we know. I think John L. Davis is going to be a difference maker in the second half, as he's shown consistently throughout this tournament. But what is your big stickler point in this game, or what are you looking forward to watching these two teams?
I think ball pressure again could be the name of the game. It was the thing that altered the game for Alabama. They didn't hold up against the physicality of that ball pressure. And Florida Atlantic, we've seen them, you know, they went up against Tennessee, very physical team. Tennessee against other team, they, you know, Tennessee when they were playing Duke was another team that was like creator challenged, we'll put it that way. And we're a bigger team, and in that setting Tennessee can look great, but against these faster teams that spread you out, they can have trouble. So it kind of makes you wonder, like, is Florida Atlantic going to be able to just, you know, port what they did against Tennessee? And I went back and was just kind of watching some of that. They were able to go and beat, you know, they have so many guys. They have so many, they spread you out. They play a really modern style. You know, on the season, Florida Atlantic, like the majority of their buckets, they just do not shoot in the mid-range. Like only 6.3% of their total attempts have been in the mid-range, deep, middle, like, and then in the lane, you know, pushing 15%, but they shoot a lot of threes above the break at 33.8, and then they shoot a lot of offense at the rim. That's what they want to do. They want to beat you off the dribble. They want to, and then they want to get you moving south to north once they get the ball to the baseline and get you rotating. And San Diego State, really, with their physicality, I think your point that about Jay Billis like manipulating policy a little bit is funny to think about. It's like, but if that is a factor, you know, if that's a factor that could slow them down, like I could see that slowing down Florida Atlantic. And what a funny thing too, man, when you think about the tournament, like if you eke by, you know, we watched the end of that Memphis game together on that. You, me and Kyle watched that in LA together. You know, maybe they give Memphis that timeout and we're not even here right now. That's right. What's so funny about like how thin the margin of victory or what it takes to get there. That's how thin it can be.
Speaking of San Diego State, that defense, this is a stat that I had pulled up that I thought is amazing, because I keep talking about UConn. They have won by an average margin of 22.5 points, but another 22.5 point stat for you. San Diego State has held their four NCAA tournament opponents under their season scoring totals by an average of 22.5 points. So that's some nice symmetry on both sides. If you've watched San Diego, I mean, watch San Diego State against Creighton, right? They completely took them out of who they are as a team. They made them look, you know, almost stoic at times on offense, maybe. I mean, obviously the Nimhard injury had something to do with that a little bit. But in general, San Diego State takes you out of what you want to do. And I thought there was a fascinating quote early on in the tournament when Purdue lost to FDU, Matt Bradley. He had a quote after that. He was like, "We watched that happen and we were all watching as a team and we all said to ourselves, oh, wow, anybody could win this tournament, right?" So it was the anything is possible moment in this tournament outside of Princeton yelling that when they won. But I mean, it became reality that anyone could win. If Purdue could lose to a 16 seed, this thing is wide open. And I think that helped with the confidence of the San Diego State team. And look, there's been a lot of conversations about the 2020 tournament, who didn't get to play in it, who would have won it, right? Kansas has claimed that they would have won it. Well, they won last year, obviously. There was the Gonzaga thing. You know, what would they have done in 2020? We obviously saw what they did in 2021. But San Diego State was another team in 2020 that was on their way to being a top seed that could make a run. So this is their kind of redemption moment, right, for 2020. So there's some fun storylines there. But I just think the belief of San Diego State is something to keep an eye on, because as a group, the players seem to believe in this idea that they are almost a team of destiny a little bit. And Matt Bradley, he kind of stuck his neck out and said, "Thank you, FDU, for making that possible."
that's an incredible story. I hadn't heard that. But it is interesting to just compare these two teams stylistically against each other. That I don't know if you're, let's say, I don't know, let's say you're San Diego State, and who do you think they have a preference? Like, because both of these teams, I mean, San Diego State has a little more size, obviously. They Florida Atlantic has one big guy that plays consistently, who's a pretty good Tobin, who's a pretty good screener and roller and all that stuff. But I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, if Florida Atlantic got there, do you think that they would have a preference between these two teams, who they would rather see? I feel like I don't know. It seems like the size of UConn is so daunting. You know, I feel like that's probably the team they wouldn't want to see. But both of these matchups are pretty daunting, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Golden is going to be interesting in this game because he was so good in the Elite Eight, right? I mean, he was a difference maker against Kansas State, whether it was blocking shots, rim protecting, getting rebounds.
I called
rebounds.
Him Tobin. It's Golden. Yeah, you're right. I don't know where that came from. Yeah,
well, we were talking about FDU, so you're probably thinking of Tobin Anderson. So there you go. But
yes, that's probably what it was.
it all kind of just mixes together at this point. You know, we're deep in the tournament, folks. Let it be. Again, I'm on antibiotics, so I don't even know what I'm talking about at this point. But yeah, Golden is fascinating, and he's the one that I think that will be the one that I keep an eye on. If he can keep that same motor, keep that same impact, I think he's the difference maker for this team. And then I just kind of like guys like Michael Forrest that comes off the bench that has been a nice veteran presence. Obviously, he made the free throws late in the game against Kansas State, kind of sealed the victory for them. He was Dusty May's first recruit for FAU. There was this whole story about how Dusty May, when he got the job at FAU, he had never visited the campus before. And he started crying when he got to campus because he saw the facilities and how bad they were. And he was like, this is my nightmare. This is going to be the end of my career. I can't believe I did this. And to think that now they're in the Final Four. I didn't even know Tom Herman was the head football coach at FAU, but that's pretty cool. You know, I mean, it's good for them that they have a nice little rapport there with those two guys. And, you know, it's fun for FAU to kind of be in this moment. And one last larger kind of brand, because you and I love brands. You know, you and I,
we love the brands.
Yeah, we love the brands. Like, one of my segments that I want to do on the show is Battle of the Brands. And we just kind of talk about Jordan Brand, Adidas, Nike, and all the many things that are happening in that world. But I do find it fascinating, Kyle, man, that we have on one side of the bracket, Adidas, top Adidas, Miami, right? The team that is the NIL poster boys going up against UConn, a classic vintage Nike team. And then on the other side, we have the vanity brand Jordan, which is obviously Nike, going up against Adidas and FAU. So this is like Nike versus Adidas at the highest level in the Final Four. And I don't feel like we're talking about that enough. And do you think there's a world in which we get like an Adidas-Nike showdown in the final? Because that would be fun.
What percentage of people would notice and what percentage of people would care? You know, that's not going to affect whether or not I care. I find it hilarious. There's also there was some Nike Adidas stuff going on last night in the McDonald's All-American game, Tate. I don't know if you saw that.
There's a lot going on in the worlds of brands right now. Before we get into the shout outs, I want to talk about the McDonald's stuff. Is there any final points on the Final Four? Because look, just a caveat to put it out there for everyone. We are reactionist, right? You and I love watching a game, seeing what happens, seeing matchups, seeing, you know, foul trouble, all these wrinkles that happen, and then discussing, dissecting, breaking down what I just watched. I am not a predictor. I do not like to predict. Anything can happen. Injuries happen. All types of, you know, variables come into play. So I don't like to predict anything. But if I had to put, if I had to stick my neck out there and say, what do I predict? I do predict UConn winning the national championship. I think it's right there for the taking. I think if you are a Husky fan, I know you're probably a little bit nervous that it's, it's almost like nerve wracking because it is so right in front of your face. And Miami's probably going to be the biggest test on your road to get to Monday and going to win the national championship. But I still feel like in my gut and in my heart of hearts, UConn is going to end up winning this one. We're not predictors, but is there some sort of gut feeling that you have? And then we can get into the McDonald's All-American game and do some more like fun shout outs. But is there something in your gut that Kyle Mann is like, I don't know, I just feel like this team or this coach or this thing might be the difference for the Final Four?
Yeah, I don't want to hedge and like go the other way, because that's what it kind of sounded like I did earlier when I started talking about Miami in this. I feel like Miami's going to have their best defensive performance, maybe not even just of the tournament. They're going to have a really, really incredible above average defensive performance, because we saw what UConn can do and how they can pile up points. And I think that UConn will probably be able to get by enough. I feel like it's probably going to be UConn in a close game. I'll stick with my prediction that I made on the draft show. It'll probably be UConn in like a 4-6-ish game, because we've seen that Miami can even in fighting, they're going to make them sweat. Of course, you know, and then what you were talking about is like if they don't blow them out, if they have trouble scoring the ball, it could be close throughout. You start to maybe open the door to convince yourself, I'm doing it again in real time. I'm going to screw it. I'm taking Miami. I'm going to do it, Tate. Let's do it. I'm going to do it. I'm talking myself into it. The shot creators, I think they're going to have a hard time guarding the ball. UConn will. I think this team speed, screw it. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to take a chance. I'm not a great predictor either, but I just feel like Miami has some kind of, and the collective college basketball establishment clutching their pearls, because the NIL darlings who are renegades, Mavericks, who are just upsetting everybody that they're coming in here, kicking the saloon door open and firing their pistols. I think I'm going to pick Miami. You know, that's what I'm going to do. I talked myself into it. Let's do it.
I like that. And I think it would be last year when Kansas won, I had a lot of people before the game. You know, I was at the national championship game in New Orleans. A lot of people, Carolina fans, regular fans, all coming up to me and saying, there's no way the NCAA is going to let Kansas win. They're under investigation. There's just no way. That's how this works. There's no way that's going to happen. They're going to make sure they fix it so it doesn't happen. I don't think that's a thing. I think that's that's the fanatic in all of us, where you kind of buy into the conspiracy theory of the NCAA at large. Now, I don't think the NCAA is doing anything, that's not shady, right? I'm just saying in general, I don't think they're going to keep Miami from winning because of them leaning into NIL and the fact that they were involved originally in the FBI Adidas stuff. I think that's all in the past. I don't think that's going to have any, impact on what's going to happen on the basketball court. And I think I don't want to disrespect or disregard San Diego State or FAU. Obviously, I think we all have, all the people that are talking about this Final Four have to, be respectful to the fact that they could win. But I think if you look at the right side of the bracket, that is a much stronger side. It has been a much tougher path for both. I mean, obviously UConn has dominated their path, but for Miami in general. And I think whoever wins Miami-UConn has a pretty, pretty good chance to be the favorite and to go ahead and win the national championship. So I feel good about that. And I like that we didn't pick the same team. And obviously we had Coach Larinaga on the front of the pod. So I'm sure he'd be happy to hear that you picked Miami. Probably not so happy that I picked UConn. But again, I'm on antibiotics and medication, so I can always point to that as my big excuse. All right, let's get to shout outs. One thing I wanted to shout out to KenPom, because Kyle Mann, I don't know if you noticed this, but KenPom is really crafty about updating his rankings. And, he does this where it's like you look at his rankings now and you're like, oh, my God, FAU is, top 12 overall. How did I not see this coming? How did I not see this run coming? And San Diego State's, number 8 now. How did I not see this run coming? The man is a genius. And I think he should lean into it and just update the rankings where the top 4 teams right now are the Final 4 teams, because he continues to update the rankings and get people to be like, wow, this team was this on KenPom. Why did no one see them making this run? He's a smooth operator, to say the least. Shout out to Sade. But I mean, he is making this happen, and it's happening behind closed doors. I just wanted to point it out. I see what you're doing, KenPom. Tip of the cap, but I'm not afraid to call you out, because it is a little bit ridiculous. Because now I got people yelling about how great KenPom is with his rankings and how he knew these teams were going to make it.
Are you saying you want him to lift the hood and like open the door? Are you saying you want like an FBI raid of the code? You want to see the code
show algorithm? My number one rule in math, which is what a lot of the basketball, baseball, sports conversations, that have turned into, all I care about in math in general, and we did this in school, I took AP calculus, right? We all did this. You have to show your work. And that's all I ever ask. Just show your work. At least let me know where it's coming from. And then I feel a lot better. they should feel a lot better because we're all more informed about what they're actually doing with their formulas, and everyone's happy. And I'm sure there's someone out there right now that's like, oh, he does release his formula. Idiot, go check it out. Da, 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 da. I don't care. He doesn't. He's not doing it forward facing enough. And I also don't like that he's updating the rankings to make himself look smarter. But I also respect it. You know what I mean? That's what I got to say.
This is spicy take going after KenPom at the end of the season. You should have done this at the beginning so that we could have had an ongoing.
I've been going
kind
after KenPom since 2016, Kyle, man. You know what okay. I mean? Because okay. He went to Virginia Tech, but when he was at Virginia Tech was in the Big East. He doesn't like the ACC. As you can tell by his rankings every single year, he's not a fan of the ACC. So it's besides the point.
One shiny pop, baby. We're fucking back. Watch out.
Producer Kyle. Yeah, love that. Got me fired up. But there you go. Shout out to KenPom. Yeah. And also, let's talk about McDonald's. Shout out to the McDonald's All-American game, which happened last night. You and I both watched this. Isaiah Collier was the one that really stood out to me. DJ Wagner had a great second half, ended up being the MVP of the game. The East came back and won, which was pretty shocking. They were down the entire game. Not that it really matters who wins the McDonald's All-American game, because it's obviously an all-star exhibition, but it was a pretty good basketball game, in my opinion. I had fun watching it. I learned a lot about these guys' games. Bronny James, the lights were bright. He hit some big shots. You can say what you want about the guy. Had 15 points, hit 5 threes. I thought that was pretty big of him. But what was your big takeaway from the McDonald's All-American game?
Well, the shoes, Tate. That's what I was trying to say earlier, the shoes. Bronny and DJ Wagner, big NIL deals. You know, Bronny with DJ with Drake's Nocta brand, which I don't know how well that's doing. But, yeah, they were out there rocking the Nike in the game. I thought that was an interesting thing that caught my eye. And then I noticed that several other people noticed this as well. But, yeah, I agree with you. Collier looked amazing getting to the basket. Wagner, just with his kind of start, stop, herky jerky thing, he just explores the court pretty effortlessly, despite not being like a super elite athlete. And I don't know, there was a lot of talent on the floor. The thing that I was like most pleased with was just that these dudes, I didn't watch it live. This is the first one I didn't watch live in a while. And lo and behold, it's like the most competitive on court one.
yeah.
They were playing hard, you know, and I thought that was awesome. And the boots on the ground report I got from someone that was there was just that these guys were kind of really, really intense all week. I don't know if that was driven by, like, I know Ron Holland is kind of like a leader kind of guy, like kind of sets the tone. I know he's really competitive, but the thing I heard was just that they'd been talking about this all week, that there was a lot of back and forth, and you love to see it, you know, rather than just like a run out pickup game. It was nice to see these, you know, the kids are all right, Tate. That's what I'm feeling right now. I feel like the kids are all right.
As they say in the NBA, the league is in good hands. I like Ron Holland. I like his motor. He impacted the game. He had like 3 steals. He had a couple blocks. I mean, he was active. I think he's going to be great for Rodney Terry at Texas. Also, shout out to Rodney Terry getting the full-time head coaching gig at Texas, as he should have. Happy for him. Happy for Texas. I think that's all good things. The other thing I wanted to point out, and this is a me tapping my chest because this is how the internet works, but I put out there last night, Kyle, man, just responding to someone, that Bronny James is down to 2 schools, USC and Colorado. And, you know, then all of a sudden I'm getting aggregated. That is the last thing that I want to do. I do not want to get aggregated. I'm scared of the aggregators. I'm scared of Clutch Points. I'm scared of all of these, entities that do this. Look, the reason why Bronny's going to USC is obvious. We all know he's going to go to USC. LeBron wants him close. It is, you go to USC for 1 year, you go to the South Bay Lakers for 1 year, all of a sudden he's on the Lakers playing with LeBron. We all know how the plan, that's what's mapped out for Bronny James. We see it, it's the writing on the wall. And the thing that I learned last night in the McDonald's All-American game is that Isaiah Collier is perfect for Bronny James. And they were dapping each other up. They were, you know, you could tell that they were kind of building that friendship a little bit. The Colorado part of it, the NIL opportunities are abundant there, and that's because of Deion Prime Sanders. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of him, but he is demanding that his football players get million-dollar deals. He's also trying to help Tad Boyle get some guys on the basketball side. The AD there is down for NIL, so Bronny James is going to be fine, as we all know. USC is the heavy favorite. And I think that a team with him and Collier could be fun. And I think he's a great three-point specialist. I really do. I think he could be a nice off-the-ball guard for USC. So that was one thing I wanted to point out. I apologize for putting that out for the people. I don't want to get aggregated. I think we all kind of know, if you know, that he's going to go to USC. But I think watching him play with Isaiah Collier last night, he passed up the final shot, Bronny did, and gave it to Jared McCain, who's going to Duke. I didn't like that, but also, you know, as we learn with LeBron James, you got to make the right play. And I guess in his mind, that was the right play. And according to the pundits on Twitter, that was what Bronny was doing. He was just making the right play. But shout out to Bronny. Shout out to the McDonald's All-American game. I like this group of kids. I think they're a fun group. Your Kentucky guys, they were playing team basketball, defense. Together, Justin Edwards, DJ Wagner, passing it back, little, you know, two-man game with each other. So there were some fun little wrinkles in the game. I hated seeing no Tar Heels out there, but, you know, that's all besides the point. That's my last shout out. Shout out to the aggregators. Please don't aggregate what I said about Bronny. Leave it alone. But it was fun to watch that game last night. Anything else from UConn, man? Any more shout outs?
No, I think you covered all the shout outs. It's a busy time of the year. We've been at it pretty consistently here, and I'm ready to watch these games Saturday, man. I think they're going to be good.
They're going to be really good. So Saturday is the Final Four. In case you missed it, that's why we just talked about it ad nauseum here for about 40 minutes. So we got good games. We got Miami, UConn. Excited to see those matchups. Obviously, SDSU, FAU. That's going to be a fun game. It'll be fun to see the defense of the Aztecs. Are they able to dominate yet again as they have all tournament long? We'll be keeping an eye on all that. This is One Shining Podcast. We're going to be doing a reaction show after the Final Four. So get ready for that. Stay tuned for that. Hopefully, I'm probably around 69% right now.
Nice.
But I am far from 100%. Thank you, Kyle.
Very nice.
but I am hoping by Saturday I have my voice back. I have my brain back. I have my body working properly again. I don't know what the Spotify security guards gave me when I went down. I haven't seen anyone but producer Kyle, the Spotify security guards, and my girlfriend. And she's fine. Kyle's fine.
Bill's so lying on my name out here. It's got to be them. Bill's out here telling America I just give people diseases.
I know.
It's crazy.
I didn't like that. I did not like it Bill either. Simmons. I didn't like it either.
Took a public shot at you, Kyle. Yeah.
I know.
Guy doesn't even think twice about it.
Yeah, but he's my boss, so I just like, you know, I'm just like, yes, like and favorite.
retweet
it. So hopefully I'll be back to 100%. I'm excited about that. Again, this is going to be a great Final Four. Don't listen to the haters. The haters don't want you to watch it. Also, the women's Final Four is going to be amazing. I'm excited to watch USC, Caitlin Clark in Iowa. That's going to be a lot of fun. Kim Mulkey with LSU. She's a maniac. Virginia Tech, that's my team. I really like the Virginia Tech women's team. I think they're a lot of fun. They've been great all year. People were upset they were a one seed. They deserve to be a one seed. So if you're upset about the men's Final Four, go watch the women's Final Four. It's going to be great, too. So good weekend of basketball. Good weekend of hoops. This is One Shining Podcast. He's Kyle Mann. He is producer Kyle. I'm Tate Frazier, and we will see you Saturday night. Thanks, everybody.